Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Ever think about what it sounds like under the sea? Those beautiful, haunting sounds were the calls of the humpback whale, the Atlantic spotted dolphin, and the gray seal. So imagine those sounds were how you navigate the world around you. And then imagine that that world around you was steadily getting louder and harder to navigate and drowning you out. Here to talk about the science of underwater sound is Leela Hatch. She's a marine ecologist with the Stellwagen Bank National Marine Sanctuary, and that's run by NOAA, which stands for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Leela, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much.
First, take us to Stellwagen Bank. Am I pronouncing that right, Stellwagen Bank?
Yes, you are.
It's off the coast of Massachusetts. What would we see and what would we hear there?
Well, we leave the port of Boston. We travel about 25 miles, and we dive down under the water, and we'd be listening to an incredibly rich food web of animals, all of whom are sonic, all of whom are producing sounds.
They're all making sounds.
Most of them. So we're talking about everything from the crabs and the lobsters to the fishes, many of our ground fish species that we know so well, our cod and our haddock, all the way up through those charismatic animals that we're watching from our whale watching boats.
So we think about fish being in water, but we don't think about the sounds that they're making. Why is sound important to marine animals?
Sound is an incredibly important part of the underwater environment. The sound waves travel very fast underwater, and they can travel very long distances without losing their energy. And so for these animals, this is one of the best ways for them to really sense very large areas, everything from predator to prey, other members of their species, communication. So this is just a really rich medium, much better than light, which degrades quite quickly in the marine environment.
So are they actually like they're echolocating and they're sharing information with each other? And
many of them are. So some of them are producing sound incidentally. They're doing other things that are producing a sound. A sea urchin is feeding and scratching away at a surface, and that's making a sound. That sound is not meaningful to the urchin, but it's hugely meaningful to larval fish and other critters who then know that's a rich environment and might actually navigate towards it and settle there. So there can be that kinds of incidental sound. It can also be for fish, absolutely vital to their courtship behavior, how they set up, how they're going to interact with one another. And a whole spawning event can partially be triggered by the acoustics of that event.
That is so cool. All right. So these sounds are incredible. So I want to listen to some of them. We're going to start at the bottom of the food chain. Let's listen here. That's a lobster?
That's a lobster.
How?
Well, they're actually using the hard parts of their body to create that sound. And it's really important. There are invertebrates, again, like the urchin, who are doing that. They're just, you know, feeding along and making the sound. But lobsters are doing this purposefully. It's part of antagonistic behavior among individuals. And we know very much that it's probably used by males to showcase their dominance, lower frequencies, louder sounds with larger males who are competing for mates.
That's so interesting.
So it's a really, really big part of the show.
All right. So let's take a step up to fish. It sounds like a scene from a horror movie.
It does.
Right?
It does.
Like creeping down the hall. What are we hearing there? What is that?
You're hearing the drumming of an Atlantic haddock.
Haddock. They drum. Haddock. Wait.
Yeah.
Haddocks drum.
Yep. They're absolutely a big part of the band. And when they get together, that is a really loud show. And it's a really big part of showing females their size, of competing against other males and grouping the activity together for reproductive display.
So, like, drumming their tails on something?
No. This is actually part
of inside of
absolutely.
Them.
This is actually part of their swim bladder and parts of their musculature making that sound rhythmically. And
wow.
They're, you know, timing it, and it has lower frequencies for those larger individuals, all those types of things.
So at the top now, we have the big guys. Let's listen to them there. So who is that big one and why is it making that noise?
That is a North Atlantic right whale.
Okay.
And that's a really iconic sound for Cape Cod Bay and for Massachusetts Bay because that's the sound that both males and females use as a contact call among individuals when they're feeding here. We use that very much to find these animals and to help us understand how many of them are around, where they are. It's a really important part of how we study North Atlantic right whales.
So that really strikes me because so far what you've talked about is how these sounds affect the relationship between the animals in the water. But you're saying that these sounds, we have to think about the fact that they're important to our relationship with the animals as well from this, in this case, research.
Absolutely. Listening to them and listening to all of these critters, figuring out where animals are spawning even in fish species is vital to protecting. We need to protect the reproductive behavior of fish species in order to ensure that we have sustainable long-term populations for them as well. So listening is a big part of how we protect the times and the places that are important to species.
All right, let's give our listeners one more sound. This is another marine mammal, but it's got a very different way of communicating. Okay, so my first reaction would be like flock of birds, but obviously this is underwater, so what are we hearing?
It is a flock. It's
okay,
just a flock
close.
Of Atlantic white-sided dolphins.
Dolphins.
So this is actually, if you're out on a whale-watching boat, you may have come across 5, 10, even 100 of these animals streaming through the water. They're absolutely beautiful to watch in a large group. And these higher-pitched sounds, higher tones on the piano, higher frequencies are how they communicate. The sound doesn't go as far, but it has incredibly rich content. And it can tell you a lot, all the way for something like a bottlenose dolphin down to the individual's identity.
Okay, so these sounds are all important. It's really, I mean, this is a rich environment where sound is necessary to life. Something is starting to drown those sounds out. What's happening?
Well, we've been listening for a long time in several places in the ocean where we can really make those measurements and say, okay, over the course of the advance of commercial shipping, for example, in the world's oceans, where we're moving now over 98% of the world's goods on large container ships, that growth has been paralleled by a continuing rise in lower frequency underwater sound. And because of that, the animals that use those same frequencies to communicate have a distant hum in the background all the time, quite chronically. We can measure that change over decades, and we can find it's over 3 decibels, a doubling of acoustic power.
So we have a sample of that sound of a commercial ship engine. Let's listen to it so we can understand what you're saying. So is that an illustration of the background noise that you're talking about?
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's the sound of the propellers of the vessel, the cavitation that comes off of the blades of a propeller, which is just the bursting of the bubbles. And those bursting of all those bubbles all together create this lower frequency hum. And one boat, two boats, the thousands of boats that are in our world's oceans and densely packed into our shipping lanes as they come in and out of ports, that's a continuous addition to the background sound.
And it's a growing addition, yes?
It's a growing addition, yes.
A lot?
A lot, yes. So every decade we're seeing about a 3 decibel rise.
Oh my
and
goodness.
That is each of that is a doubling because decibels is an exponential scale.
So you said earlier when we listened to the dolphins, they had a higher pitch sound, and you said something about that sound not traveling as far because the pitch was higher. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. So higher frequencies attenuate more quickly in the ocean. The energy is lost in the medium faster.
Mm-hmm.
Lower frequencies, there are places in the ocean where we can truly hear a low frequency signal pole to pole. So we are just talking hundreds of thousands of miles that some of these lower frequencies can travel in the ocean, which is something that animals have evolved to use as a capacity to sense their environment at that scale, to communicate a blue whale using an entire ocean basin as their supermarket,
mm-hmm.
right? And so they're communicating with each other and they're finding resources at that scale. They need this signal and its capabilities at that scale.
So one of the sounds we heard earlier was a right whale, and that sound was pretty deep. And I noticed that this commercial shipping engine sound was pretty deep. So, for example, what's happening with the right whales as the sound waves get clogged?
Absolutely. That's something that the Stellwagen Bank National Marine Sanctuary is a pretty amazing environment to use as a testbed to start to understand that. We have commercial traffic lanes that bisect the sanctuary coming into the Port of Boston with commercial traffic. And we have this periods of time where we have up to a third and a half of the existing right whale population that come here to feed in the spring. And so we've looked at how far the signal of a right whale can travel during time periods that are quieter versus time periods that are more dominated by vessel traffic.
Now, you had some research about quieter after September 11th when shipping stopped. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's an amazing study, a really, really amazing serendipity, which took place in the Bay of Fundy. It was led by researchers at the Boston's New England Aquarium, who have been doing a very long-term study of right whales in that environment. And they were studying stress hormones. And then 9/11 happened, and all of the commercial shipping was shut down. And suddenly, they had a stress record of what was happening inside right whales' physiology during that change between dominant shipping traffic in New Brunswick to nothing. And they found a really dramatic decrease in stress hormones in North Atlantic right whales during the period right after 9/11. So it's not a reproducible experiment, but it led the many of us who are studying, you know, stress response in animals in this sort of sublethal part of how noise as a background component can affect animals to really open our eyes and say, well, yeah, we have to keep trying to understand this, even though it's so hard in these long-lived critters.
You said earlier that animals underwater have really evolved to use that ecosystem to share sound. Do you have any evidence that they're evolving to adapt to this new normal that they're living in?
It's a really good question. There's a lot of debate about what habituation could look like for animals. Really, habituation does demand that you no longer have a stress response. So right away, that puts a demand on researchers to truly understand, well, is it habituation or are they just carrying a higher stress load?
Meaning so the stress doesn't change, but does that mean it's dropped or is it just the new normal is higher?
The new normal is higher.
I see.
You know, so that's a question that, you know, just to be blunt, we're still struggling in humans to understand that in urban environments and, you know, groups of people who live near airports and trying to tackle that in long-lived marine mammals and these really large species has been really tough. But we can take some of those experiments into tank experiments, and we are with fish and with other critters. And in those kinds of populations, we really, you know, can see cause for concern.
What's the next interesting research question in your mind?
Oh, there are many. This is a field that's really kind of growing and is really wide open. A lot of the interesting research in the last year has started to focus in on even further down that trophic chain. So if I talk to you again, we're going to have to start with zooplankton.
What are zooplankton?
Zooplankton are the ocean's insects.
So
they are
little,
the first
little things.
Right. And they are really what makes everything cook in an area like Stellwagen, where, you know, the first thing that happens is the nutrients come to the surface. The sun hits them in the spring. We grow the algae, the phytoplankton, and then the zooplankton come in and form large clouds. And then the forage fish follow them. And after the forage fish, then you start to get the humpbacks that come and really have lunch.
So given the breadth and scope of the effect of this noise pollution, is there any way to reduce it? What's happening now to try to do that?
There absolutely are. One of the only benefits of this type of study is that with noise, you turn it off and it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's very different than other different kinds of effects that we work with that have a long-term tag. So we have been working with a variety of countries. The U.S. led these efforts through NOAA and the U.S. Coast Guard at the International Maritime Organization at the UN to pass voluntary measures to quiet commercial ships, build them in ways that are quieter. And that effort continues on. We ratified those voluntary requirements, those voluntary measures in 2014, and now Canada continues to promote their adoption.
So do you have hope that there are some good changes coming?
I do. Yeah. I do. I really do see. I see industry increasingly engaged. I see, you know, even in the realm of shipping, a quieter ship is a more fuel-efficient ship. And there are lots of reasons to burn less fuel if you're a ship. And industry knows that. And so I do think that long-term, a greener ship will be a quieter ship.
Lila Hatch is a marine ecologist with the Stellwagen Bank National Marine Sanctuary. Lila, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And listeners, if you want to explore some more ocean sounds, visit our website, radioboston.org. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.